Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. Going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City, and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
The illustrious Jabba bids you welcome.
I'm going to regret this.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast, brought to you by Church Planner Magazine.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
Coming to you for another Church Planner Podcast episode.
Why am I already laughing?
Sponsored by MoGive.
MoGive.com. And hey, if you guys want to give online as a church plant, MoGive's a way to go. It's easy. They'll send you everything you need. They got handouts you can give to your church to show them how to do it. People can even text in money.
What?
Yeah, I had a woman come up to me once when we were introducing MoGive, and she was way more advanced than me. She's like, "Can I text my money?" And I was like, "You know how me, right? I'm not very technical." I wanted to go into my, "Yeah, let me explain to you how the internet works" speech. And then I thought, hold on a second. I'm really not that technically inclined. She might know something I don't. And I went back to MoGive and said, hey, can she text money in? They're like, yep.
I think that's crazy.
That just seems like, to me, like the Jetsons. Like, can I press a button and have hot food come out of a machine? You know?
Kind of wish we had the whole next generation. You walk up to the computer screen, you tell it what you want to eat, and it makes it for you.
We're almost there. Like right now, you can print body parts. Have you seen this?
This is how bad our commercials get.
So go on down to MoGive. They will print human body parts for surgery for you or food. It doesn't taste very good. MoGive.com/church. Remember, your coffee ought to be printed from MoGive. How's that?
I like it. I like it.
You could print communion.
Ooh.
You literally could, like, honestly, I say this, I know our audience go, no way. YouTube, the things that they have now, they have this new print technology, and you can print food, and they're now printing body parts from your DNA. Have you followed this?
You know, I want to express something to you. Just because you saw it on the internet doesn't make it true.
No, it's a big deal, man. It's actually a real deal. So what they're doing is
I really do need you to understand this concept, though. Not everything on the internet's real.
I'm aware of that. But I don't think you are. This is actually truth stranger than fiction. They DNA, they clone your human tissue, but they have to have this printable matrix that they print with it that gives it the shape. But it's got your DNA, so your body doesn't reject it. And that's how they're starting to do organ transplants. Cutting edge technology. I'm not making this up. You can't make this up. Well, you could. It sounds made up.
You but could. It's actually true. You could make it up. You could put it in video format. And if you could stick it in Peyton's newsfeed, he's going to believe it.
It's definitely true. And they're doing it with food too, as an answer to the food shortage. And it tastes horrible, but it's nutritious.
There's actually not a food shortage. Kind of like real
vegetables.
There's not a food shortage in the world. There are people who just won't let the food get to where it should go. Yeah.
That is true. That is true. Yeah, and the poor people can't afford cloned food that's printed. They can't.
Yeah, when it's like $10,000 a meal, it's a little bit pricey.
Yeah, but organs are even more.
More than $10,000?
I would imagine.
I just want to know what the warranty on it is. Like, let's say you get a printed heart. Is it like, well, you got a 6 months parts and labor, but then.
All I'm saying is I'd hate to see a paper jam when they're printing a kidney. So that's mogive.com/church.
I have always wanted to know, I don't know if I can share this on the podcast, but this has been a genuine question of mine. They can pretty much do a transplant on everything. Hearts, kidneys, you name it. They can just about do it. They can't do a brain transplant yet, but I think they're probably working on that.
Right.
So here's my question. Can you get a testicle transplant? And if you could, and then you had a kid, whose kid would it be biologically?
So you said that we were going to get through an episode without having to edit anything.
But this doesn't need to be edited. This is a genuine medical question. I'm just wanting to know. You did use
the medical word for that body part, so it's okay.
Well, I'm only...
Use the scientific name.
I'm just curious.
Well, that is a good question, Pete Mitchell. I've always been really curious.
That's like been a question in my head. Like, you know, can they do it? And if they can, like, and you have a kid, whose kid is it?
Well, you know, all the fertility doctors that listen to our show right now are just going, Peyton and Pete, you know, come on, boys. That's a simple answer. We just don't know it.
We just don't, because I know they do the plastic nuticles for dogs. Dude, you just gotta stop. I'm just saying.
I don't want to know any more about that subject. Welcome to the Church Planner Podcast. Guys, this is Smack Talk, where we talk about anything. That's it. It's no holds barred. We're trying not to edit today, but...
Why don't we tell them what our actual serious topic is so they can decide if they want to stick around that long.
So the topic today is how to start a church with unbelievers.
It's kind of anticlimactic, wasn't it?
That was a mic drop. That was like a dun-dun.
So that'll be the serious topic. When we get to the serious topic, we still got some time for some smack talk. So I want to ask you, what do you think of the old MacBook Pro? Don't worry, I'm getting off the testicle and all that Pete, topic.
I'm still – okay, I'm not as poor of a church planner as I used to be. But I still just can't buy MacBook Pros just because it came out, Pete. I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. Me neither.
That's so not true. You have one already, don't you? Did you buy it yet?
Okay. I was on the website. Here's the only reason why I didn't buy it. Because I've been waiting for this announcement because I knew I was going to buy a new one. Even though I just bought a MacBook Pro 6 months ago, I'm going to give that one to my wife.
I was just going to say, it's time for Jamie to get a new hand-me-down.
She gets a new hand-me-down every time Petey wants a new computer. But here's my problem. Well, there's a lot of problems with a new MacBook Pro. And the reason why I didn't order it online is I was like, okay, I have to go into the store and actually see it. Because I'm not 100% sure that it's the right move for me to make. But a big problem that I have with it is now it's all USB-C, which means I'm going to need like tons of dongles, which just sounds bad, but I'm going to need tons of dongles.
Stop it.
For the new computer. Because everything is like USB and I won't be able to use it on it.
Have USB stuff or USB, the computer's all USB?
The computer's all USB-C. Which is a different size than typical USB ports.
But wouldn't it make sense if you were coming out with a computer and it's kind of like the new thing USB-C, you would also be like, hey, let's just put a USB port on it too?
I wish they had. But see, like, it doesn't have the same power cord. That's going to be USB-C. The only ports on it are USB-C. So power
everything. That makes no sense.
Well, and that's the reason why I'm looking at it going, great. So, I mean, I'm going to have to buy all new everything. And that's honestly what held me back from pulling the trigger and ordering it.
Yeah, give it some time.
So I need to go in the store, actually look at it, see if it's worth it. And I don't know, man.
Dude, if you can press a button and like roast turkey comes out of it with hot gravy and mash, I'm in. It's like the Jetsons. How long do you think it'll be till we... Sorry, we're back on that topic. I took it back there. Sorry. What's some good smack talk, man?
Did you see the new Windows Surface computer?
No.
They're saying it's far superior to the Macintosh lineup. And when you see the when you see the video on it, I completely agree with them. It's insane how nice this thing is.
No way.
Yeah. 27-inch. And it's a desktop, right? But you can lay it down and draw on it like it's a, you know, like a tablet almost.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then it's got this little, I can't remember what they call it, but it's like this little circle thing that you can use it to control what's on your screen, a dial, or you can place it on the screen and then like it does all this other cool stuff. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm looking at that going, I even hate Windows.
You're going to get both, aren't you?
No, I don't think so. I don't have that much desk room.
Yeah, you know what? I had two laptops, and that doesn't work. You can't have two laptops. Because I had one that I used for the church, and then when I started working for NAMM, they gave me one. So I just donated to the church. I was like, boom, you guys can have that. But it didn't make sense having two laptops.
Well, I have multiple computers. Like right now, I'm talking to you on my Mac. I have my PC over to the right. And then I got the MacBook Pro.
You know, this is like the boringest smack talk ever.
All right. So I'm off the techie stuff. Okay. I'm done.
So here's the deal. So I had a question this morning because, I slept through my alarm today, and that doesn't happen. Like, dude, seriously, recently I must be stressed out. Okay. There's a lot of personal stuff going on. Nothing weird, nothing like my marriage falling out, but just, you know, pressures and burdens in life right now. And, so I must be really stressed, but anyways, I sleep, man. Like, cause I'm up normally at like 5 a.m. Lying in for me is like 5:30. So this morning I woke up at 6:20, and Friday mornings are like my daddy daughter day with Liberty. Right. Mm. So, I wake up at 6:20. And so when I'm out with my daughter, I took her to Starbucks. So we got a late start. I take her out and she's like my early riser. She's up early with me. She's just right behind me every morning. And, I ask her, I go, hey, did I sleep? Like, did my alarm go off? She goes, what's it sound like? And so I pulled up, my alarm goes off to a song. And so, she goes, oh yeah, I played it for her. And she goes, yeah, no, that played the whole song multiple times. So that got me thinking. On our 200th episode, we asked each other a lot of funny questions. So again, because I think of you, I think, what is Pete wake up to every day? That's my question. What do you wake up to? Do you wake up to, you know, screaming voice? Do you wake up to, I got the power? Or do you wake up to, you know, the radio or a doot?
Let me explain something to you about being self-employed instead of working for the man. The only time I set an alarm is when I'm traveling and I have to speak somewhere in the morning.
That must be nice. You wake up to the chirping of birds. Nature sounds.
I usually wake up having to go to the bathroom so bad that I am getting up right then.
You wake up to the sound of your own gas. What was that? I have to go to the bathroom.
I'm just saying that I don't set an alarm, man. I don't set an alarm.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because that was funny before we were praying and I burped right in the middle of our prayer.
You go, dear God, burp. And then you continue on. And so I had to interrupt and go, and God, thank you so much for giving us gas or something like that.
Yeah. And then it did actually turn into somewhat of a, and we were laughing because we know God has a sense of humor. We are made in his image. But I think I added, and Lord, that was a great design to have gas come out both ends. That's really helpful. You think about it, you know, the digestive tract runs top and bottom. So that's a pretty genius design. Got to say,
man, you remember when I was saying I was hoping we weren't going to have to edit anything out of this one?
Hey, all things give him glory. I'm just saying. Martin Luther, here's an interesting fact. Martin Luther used to believe that when he had flatulence, it was spiritual warfare. So it'd be like, I rebuke you, devil. He felt that they were like weapons in his arsenal provided from heaven against demonic foes.
Then some of us have more spiritual warfare than others. That's all I'm saying.
And whoa, I'm under attack.
Some of us have what we call the big guns.
Oh, no. I love the smell of battle. That was Luther's favorite quote.
Oh, my gosh. Oh gosh. I can't even remember what our topic was. Oh, yeah, starting church with unbelievers. Have them listen to this podcast. If they're still cool, you know you got a winner. There you go. Problem solved.
Well, here's the deal, man. Is, you know, you when you're around non-believers all the time, they think about, they'll ask you stuff like this, you know. Why did God make boom, you know? Or I always wonder why God made slugs. I was always kind of a,
what was your
problem to me?
What was the answer?
Well, when you live in Wales and it rains every day, they have monster slugs there. Like, you've never seen slugs so big. So I actually had a little crisis of faith when I was there. Like, Lord, you can't be good and have made these. I'm struggling a bit here. How is that possible? And I don't think he made them that big. I think he made them with the capacity to grow that big. And it just rains a lot there. So I don't blame God for that. But they were terrifying. They were really nasty. I'm not kidding you. They were so nasty.
That's good to know. That really is.
They have holes that open up in their heads. It's gross. Can't tell you about it.
I think this could quite possibly be one of the worst podcasts we've ever recorded.
Oh, I thought that was last week. You know, it's funny because I actually... Hey, just because you don't believe that printers can print human organs and food, and you disbelieve me about slugs, doesn't mean these things aren't true, Pete. Just because the internet says them doesn't mean they're true, but just because Peyton says them doesn't mean they're false. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I think that's actually a pretty good litmus test.
Hey, man, I get most of my information from the internet. You should trust it.
Jeez Louise. Speaking of the internet, how about that election?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Why don't we do an episode on the election? Do we have time before the election happens? Tell people how to vote?
I think we should do a tell them how to vote.
Hey, that's what churches did when I was growing up.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I could tell you how to vote, but you're going to have to be writing in a whole lot of candidates because I'm not going to tell you to click off any one of the major parties. That's for sure.
I'm going to tell you, this has been the most entertaining election of my entire life.
I have not been able to stomach pretty much a good 99% of it.
You know who I'm watching on TV is I'm watching all of the hearings and investigations of the corruption, and that they're not getting anywhere. I mean, they're uncovering all kinds of stuff.
No one cares.
No one cares. And everybody they have on that stand, I don't really know much about that. Just dummies up. It just gets stonewalled. There's so much corruption. And it's amazing to me. We are a very, very corrupt government.
Oh, it's incredibly corrupt right now. That's why, you know, you made the comment that when God wants to judge a nation, he gives them bad leaders.
Mm.
And I'm like, yeah, because the two choices we got, it doesn't matter which way you go, door A or door B.
Well, and that's it, man.
As a nation, you're done.
We, you know, and it's not even that God gives them to him. It's he hands us over. And I think, you know, frankly, I mean, looking at American history, that ship sailed long ago. I mean, you know, anyone who kind of says we're still God's nation is, you know, kind of a little bit naive. I mean, you know, for years now, we've been reaping what we've sown for decades and decades. And, you know, I'm just saying, man, it's not that I'm unpatriotic. I am, but I don't put my faith in the kingdom of man anymore. You know, it's the kingdom of God, man. That's the only thing that's going to last.
Yep. You know, on a side smack talk note, I thought one of the funnier emails we got this week was from one of our church planners who listens to the podcast. And last week we talked about, you know what I'm going? The church that ran the anti-craft beer ad, and then the brilliant craft beer establishment that said, hey, we're going to use this as a $1 off coupon. Bring it in and get $1 off your craft beer. And we actually had a church planner write in and goes, I used to live there. I know what church you're talking about because they've done stuff like that before. I thought that was rather hilarious. So this last week, I'm in Salt Lake City. I was speaking in Salt Lake this last, well, actually in Orem, wherever that is in Utah, 40 miles south of the airport. That's all I know. And I cannot tell you how hard it is to find beer in the state of Utah.
I told you.
I'm driving back to the airport and I go, thankfully, I'm going to the airport where I can get my two favorite things, beer and Wi-Fi, because without those, I don't know how you survive in this world.
How do you survive in Utah? I mean, shoot, man, I picture you driving down the street, rolling over the window. Excuse me, is there beer around here? And Mormons just giving you horrified looks and grabbing their children and pulling them closer.
I will say this. So I'm in my hotel room and I'm looking around for the Gideon Bible because I'm like, I had this funny thought go through my head. Hey, I wonder if the Gideons placed the Book of Mormon. And so I find the drawer that's got the Bible placed by the Gideons. And of course, the Book of Mormon. So I have to vox all the guys who are in my business growth consulting. And I go, well, I found this. It's not staying in this room when I leave.
Where did it go after you left?
I don't know, but it's not in my room anymore. It might have found its way back into the trash heap somewhere. That's all I'm
recycled.
Saying.
I was very responsible of you, Pete, to recycle.
Well, material. I figured it was in bad taste anyway, so we should just get rid of the whole thing.
Yep. Well, you know, what was I going to say to you? On the subject of beer, you know that I am on a beer fast currently.
Because of employment, not by yes, choice, indeed. Because of employment.
You know what? It's kind of cool, though. You know, I've really made peace with it, but. There was a beer that came out that, let's just say I'll be thinking about it, if not drinking it. It came out, the Deftones, which is one of my favorite bands on the planet, crafted a craft beer with Belching Beaver Brewery, local here to San Diego. And it's called Phantom Bride, named after one of their songs. And it sold out like crazy. Really? It's on eBay for like $20 a bottle.
Is it any good? Well, you wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know. But apparently the Deftones like it.
Most craft beer honestly isn't very good. So I'm just gonna say I like to go for what's good. Yeah, I don't drink very often. I mean, when you got a wife that doesn't drink, it just pretty much means you don't drink. So I don't get to drink very often. It's only when I get to go on the road. Why do you think I've been traveling so much lately, Peyton?
There's a lot of beers out there for you to try, my friend.
There's a lot of beers in the world. Dude, Salt Lake City has become my home away from home. That is literally like my layer of a point almost on every trip I go to. Because it's the hub system, right, on the airlines. Almost all of them fly into Salt Lake and then from there, we go wherever we're going. At least,
no kidding.
When we're flying Delta or JetBlue or American, yeah, we fly into Salt Lake.
Wow, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Although I did meet Stan Lee
at Salt Lake
when he was on. No, when he was on his way to Salt Lake, he was on his way to some NerdCon. Nice. And yeah, it was pretty cool, man. It was, you know. So hey, thank you, Salt Lake City, for putting me in contact with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I saw him at LAX. Why, hello. That's what he said. I swear to you.
LAX is literally the worst airport on the planet.
Yes, it is. And San Diego is definitely the best.
Well, see, I got to say Long Beach is the best.
Oh, well, yeah, because of the proximity of your house. Pete and I must have sucked up about 15 minutes of talk time, like two little junior high school girls talking about airports this week.
Well, next week I get to go to good old San Antonio, which, by the way, I'm going to be out in San Antonio from Wednesday through Sunday, coming back on Sunday. Actually, I should say this week. By the time everyone listens to that, that'll be this week. And I'm really excited because I get to hook up with one of the guys that's one of the church planners who's in my business growth consulting course. He lives out there.
No kidding. Which one?
Dominic.
Oh, cool, man.
Dominic, yeah. I'm like, hey, are you close to San Antonio? He's like, that's 35 minutes away. I'm like, dude, let's hook up.
The guy who led me to Christ lives in San Antonio.
No kidding.
He does. Eric Fulmer, give him a shout out. Thanks for sharing the gospel with me, my friend.
Yeah,
no kidding. He lives there.
I'd still be a lonely, depressed man without Peyton.
You know, I should put him in touch. Hey, Eric, will you get together with Pete? Pete needs to get saved. Will you tell him about Jesus?
You might need to do it over a beer. You get his full attention then.
Indeed.
By the way, I got to throw this out there. The guys in the church planners who are in the business growth consulting are just tearing it up right now. I mean, Tyrone is so excited because he just got his first client this last week.
Woohoo!
Monthly retainer, percentage of profits. I mean, he's tearing it up, right? All these guys are just tearing it up. I'm really excited for him. So we're actually getting ready to start another group. And I put together a webinar this time. So if you guys are listening to this going, I don't even know what Pete's talking about. If you are looking for what I think is the most perfect job/business to have while you're church planning, because it doesn't tie up all your time and you get to make pretty good money doing it, then you want to check out this webinar. Nothing sold on the webinar. Keep your wallet in your back pocket. I'm not going to ask for you to give me your money or anything. Check out the webinar because I basically walk you guys through what I think are the three keys to be successful in that business. And if it sounds like something you want to do, then we'll talk afterwards. But check it out. You can go to bivowebinar.com. That'll link you over to the webinar registration form. But check it out, guys. I'm telling you, you want to get in on this next group. Last time, I only wanted five guys in it. That's all I've got in it. It's just five guys. So five guys, gals, whatever. So check it out, man. bivowebinar.com. Show notes.
Yeah, baby. Hey, so commercial time number two. If you guys haven't picked up the Jump School DVD, definitely pick that up. It's still free, $5.99 shipping and handling. And that'll give you also a link to buy the study guides. You can buy them in bulk. If you got a group of, I can't remember how many you can buy at a time, but
you can buy as many as you want. But if you buy five or more, you get a discount.
That's what it was. Yeah. So groups of five. So I would say, you know, don't exceed a group bigger than 15 if you're going to do it. But as many as you can cram in your room and still have a decent discussion, it's worth picking that up. I mean, it is – we've got – I keep hearing people saying that they're going through it and they're super blessed. And really, guys, this is to mobilize your team into being gospel animals. That's the whole – it's to mobilize him. It's to make him into a commando unit. It's to do a lot of the work for you in training him, because that's the number one question we get is, how do I train my core team? And so you go to you go to jumpschool.com or jumpschooltraining.com/free. You go there and you will get the link to get the DVD. And like I said, you pay shipping and handling. And on the tail end of that, you can order study guides if you want.
And with that, I would play a soundbite, but it won't start up today. So
is that your new computer?
No.
Won't do it?
No.
On the new computer?
It's the old one. Oh. Actually, the old one doesn't like it when I have Google Chrome open, the soundboard one open. And I can't close it down because it's downloading like this 5 gigabyte file. And I don't want to start it over again.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, cool, man. All right. Well, hey. So, Doc Brown.
Great, Scott.
It's time for this week's topic.
All right. Well, hey, I'm fighting my throat today, guys. So I'm going to try to be able to get through this. But ever since we started this podcast, I have not been able to, I've been having a problem with my throat all day. So kind of weird. But anyways, today's topic is how do you start a church plant with non-believers? Now, I did this, you know, years ago. You know, I always feel like God kind of tricked me into planning Pillar Community Church in Wales, but I've always found that non-believers are really, really awesome when you're on mission, and they're good at going on mission. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but the more non-believers you have, you don't need that many Christians to go with you on mission. I mean, that's what Paul did, right? It was kind of like you know, the guy in World War II where they said, you know, what's your position on the radio? And he goes, I've got the enemy to the south, the enemy to the north, and the enemy to the west and the east of me. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to let him get away from me this time. you can be surrounded completely by unbelievers in mission, and the Lord still got the upper hand. In fact, that it's if you're apostolic, you're called to church planting, that's your sweet spot. What I think actually makes it hard is when you have too many Christians. I remember doing the open mic night in the gay coffee house at the beginning of Refuge Long Beach. And what killed that night, you know, it was actually a very good night. But when I say killed it, the worst mistake we made was we brought too many Christians with us. So when it came to the open mic time and people were talking and there's, you know, dialogue floating around the room, there were too many of us. We actually started having the dominant voice, and that's never good in a situation like that. So
let me have you unpack that. What do you mean the dominant voice?
Well, what would happen is for every one comment that we would have that was clearly non-Christian, we might have three comments that were clearly from the point of view that we were getting across. So on that night, it was a really cool topic.
Let me say, was it like in marketing, we would call this the us versus them scenario. Did it play out almost like that of like,
no, well, no, not really, but it just was obvious that we had a stacked deck. That's what it felt like. It didn't feel like us and them because it was a very, open, very, very good. I mean, before I'm ever going to do something, remember now, we're in the gay coffee house. Before I'm ever going to do something like that, I have, and I only took probably 10 people, or I should say probably only 10 people had the guts to go. You know what I'm saying? But we sat in there and it just was obvious to me there's too many of us here. I would take maybe three next time, maybe four, right? And there was maybe a room, you know, this coffee house, the part where they do the live music, was maybe 20 something people. And, so, you know, we added about 10 people to that room and we were about a third, and that was just too many for the comments. Cause obviously our people wanted to talk. And like I said, it was a good night. I mean, it ended up, you know, we ended up having lots of conversations, lots of times praying with people, lots of tears, lots of people talking about, you know, how they had sensed God in their lives. And it was amazing. It was really a miraculous night. But we made tons of mistakes. I mean, tons of mistakes. I think I've mentioned this before that there were a couple mistakes that we made. Like, first thing we should have done was buy the entire room drinks, right? Mm. There's a coffee house. There's no alcohol. But even if we're doing it in a pub or whatever, you know, the idea is that you practice gospel hospitality.
I got to tell you, it's so funny you mentioned that because when I was in Salt Lake City, sitting at the bar, I literally had Hugh Halter in the back of my head going, well, if you think you're an introvert and you like going to the bar, just buy everyone drinks. All of a sudden, you'll be talking to them. And that was the thought that was running through my head is I could buy everyone here a drink and I could talk to them all. But
that's awesome.
Because I
no, but you didn't.
Because then I'd have to talk to him. We've already discovered I don't like doing that.
But you'd be a good wingman.
I would be a great wingman because I would buy everyone the drinks and let you do all the talking.
Absolutely, man.
I just say, awesome. Oh, Peyton bought the drinks, man. I'm just here.
Well, you actually were good. Remember that time we were sharing with that one bartender? And he was...
Which one? wait. Back which in bartender?
My pre-NAM days. We were at Weird Islands.
Which islands?
There's that guy behind the bar. And he was... what's his name? Carl Vader's son-in-law.
Yeah.
And it was good. You know, we start off kind of sharing with him. So,
but we also talked to the bartender in Marietta one time.
Oh, did we really?
We did. And we talked to a bartender.
You had the hotel there and there was an island attached. And you're like, I got to go up and get the film equipment. I'm like, cool, I'll come with you. You're like, no.
No, that was you. Because I was like, I have the camera over my shoulder with the tripod, the backpack with all the cords in it. And you're like, I'm not going up to your room with you with a camera or going to a hotel room. This just looks funny.
I'll just wait down here in the lobby.
Yeah, that was one of the when I got in, because we went out to the bar. When I got back in, it was so late. I get in my room. I crawl in the bed and it is just like stained and dirty. And I'm like, oh, I am so grossed out right now. If I had seen this earlier tonight, I would not be staying in this room. It was not good.
I saw that on Facebook. Oh, I think I wrote you some advice.
No, that was worse.
Was another trip.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about when we were in Marietta.
Oh.
I got back from that and I was like, dude, this bed is, I mean, it was supposedly clean, but it was just like they didn't take care of their sheets or whatever. You need to replace.
You got me watching Hotel Impossible, man. That's changed everything.
It does, doesn't it? Mm. That's why from now on, I actually almost always, I'm staying at a Marriott. I'm not staying at almost anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the bottom line, though, is that really to be surrounded by non-believers is a good thing. It's biblical. I mean, it's, you know, some people get scared like, oh, we need a bunch of Christians with us. We got to have you really don't. If you just start discipling people, you know, almost from the beginning, I mean, it's great because as soon as people get saved, they want to go on mission. I just wrote a blog this week about how, you know, it's a sign of life. It's proof of life that if you're saved, you want to tell people, you want to be a part. You may be like Pete, you may be sitting at a bar going, I don't really want to enter conversation, but there will be some way, shape, or form that Pete engages in gospel work. It's just part of what you do when you're saved. And it doesn't have to look the same as everybody else. But I notice that when non-believers come to faith, they want to get on mission. That's like a big deal. It's just Christ in them, compelling them. It's as radical as when they don't believe in Jesus at all on day one and day two they get saved. Well, it's that big of a switch in them where they're like, hey, screw people, I hate you all, to suddenly, I love you. You know, but it's Christ's love coming through them. It's the love of Christ that compels us, Paul says. So to start a church, it's really interesting because I was talking with a guy yesterday named Jim Britz. He's a really cool church planner in San Diego County, getting ready to move to Las Vegas, where he's going to work at Hope Chapel with Vance Pittman. And he's going to train church planning church planners and hopefully church planning trainers. So I'd kind of tagged him because I train trainers in the Western U.S. and I'd kind of really seen potential in him as an outstanding trainer and took him through the training this year and then trained him as a trainer and met with him yesterday and we were just chatting. I've got a new role, which is a new project. I'm always working on projects. So my new project is to take the internship program for the Southern Baptists and for church planning. So they'll have guys that maybe are in seminary or guys that are in college or students or whatever, and they want to give them a taste of church planning. And so one of my passions is always to make it practical, hands-on. So not more classroom stuff. So Jim and I were kind of brainstorming yesterday, and there's a book called Kingdom Matrix, which has been written by Jeff Christofferson and Mac Lake, the guy I work with. And in this book, he talks about how up in Canada, Jeff Christofferson had some guys up there who there was like four of them. They moved into, I can't remember if it was Calgary or what city it was, but they move into this city in Canada. Now, you know, Canada is a bit like Europe. They don't have tons of people going to church. It's not quite as bad as Europe. It's kind of in between America and Europe. And so they go there and they just said, for the first year, we're not going to make any friends. You know, I mean, sorry. What's wrong with me?
That would have been me. I'd be, sign me up.
That's a mission I can do.
I'm a church planner. I don't make any friends.
We need Nacho Libre right now on our sound.
We need Dan Sams goes, going, I used to have a lot more friends before I got into church planning.
I got kitchen duty. I got dead guy duty. I'm thinking I need a new duty. So, you know, the better duty here was they went in for a year and they made a bunch of friends. And they just said, let's just build relationships for a year. And then what they did is they got, you know, let's say each one of them got like 15 friends. That's four couples. And they just invited these people. About a year later, they say, hey, we got a special favor. We're going to invite you to something, dinner, and feed you. We just need you to answer one simple question. And that simple question, they get there, they dine them, they wine them. And then they get together. Someone goes up front, you know, and they say, look, you know, we've been in this neighborhood for a year and we wanted to ask you just one question tonight. You can help us out. If you were to belong to some sort of spiritual community, what would it look like? You know, what would you want it to be like? And so in Kingdom Matrix, Jeff Anderstelt, Jeff Christofferson points out the fact that all these people, you know, they started saying things like, oh, I'd want it where like it wasn't just Sundays. You know, I'd want it where it was this, you know, where you know each other's problems and your things and you're interacting. And they just described missional community. And so the guys get up there and they go, hey, well, you know what? Here's the deal. You know, and he said at first it was kind of awkward, and then it got, you know, a little bit more comfortable, and people started getting really into it. And so at the end, the guys go up there and they go, look, that's exactly what we're going to be doing. We're going to start a spiritual community just like that, and we want to invite you to it. And, you know, boom, boom, boom. So within the first month, there were 60 people that night. Within the first month, 56 of those people got saved.
Wow.
And that was their church plant. And so for this program, Jim and I were brainstorming. I was like, look, for this L3 category, you know, which is level 3 interns, you know, we were just saying it would be cool to make that, you know, like get them doing that, right? See if they can do that, you know, with a team of other interns. Maybe they recruit a little team and you get them from day one learning how to do frontline infiltration for the gospel. Now, this is my passion because in places like Europe, we didn't have a choice. I mean, Refuge Long Beach was really, it was different because I inherited a core team. It wasn't really, they had tried to launch, but it didn't really go anywhere. And so I was like, look, guys, you launched as kind of like an extension campus, but we really need to launch as a church plant. So I'm going to give 3 more months. I'm going to train you. We're going to go out. But really still, I found it more difficult because I had more Christians on my hands. And guys, I'll be honest with you. When you watch the Jump School DVD series, the bonus episode is called Rally Points. And what that whole episode is about is how difficult it can be to lead a group of Christians on mission. That's why I'm into, you know, when you're trying to go into mission, the bigger the group of Christians you have with you, the harder it is, right? It's not easier. So we always think of things like the big launch, right? Like take 100 people, 150 people. You've just stripped the risk out of it. You've just stripped all of the difficulty. You've stripped the ability to infiltrate on the same degree. Now, Jim Britz is a guy who managed to do both, but it is extremely difficult, right? And so here's the deal is, you know, when you're talking about like small teams, that's what Paul did. And I think Paul did it because he didn't want to outnumber the non-believers. He didn't want to stack the deck. He didn't want the ratio to be wrong. Because once people, like at that coffee house, when you said the yes and them question, Pete, it was kind of like this.
The S and M question? What do you mean?
Well, you know, when you asked, you know, is it kind of like the us and them thing?
Oh,
when
us
you're
versus
in,
them. Yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
Long Beach.
Yeah.
So it, to a certain degree, yes. Because what I noticed was the dynamic was once people started kind of realizing there's a bunch of Christians in this audience, it started to change the degree of openness. People didn't feel as safe, right, to share. So remember, we're in a gay coffee house. We're in an extremely liberal part of town. We're in, L.A.
Didn't help that you guys were wearing your Trump shirts.
This is a number of years ago. And
you were still voting for Trump even then. Come on.
You're so funny, dude. And so here's the deal is, you know, you really don't want people to be outnumbered. I remember sitting in a group of all in my home, because what would happen is when we would do home studies, mission communities, we called them COGS, Communities of Grace. And we would do that, I would keep moving my groups on. I'd keep giving them to other people, and I would take all the new people in the church. So all the people that needed discipleship, I would enter and I would take them in our home. So we keep rotating COGS. Now, people didn't like that because about 6 months in, they were so tight with their COGS or their small groups. But we felt, you know what? Now you get to lead one, or now you get to mix with other people. So we'd break them up, mix them around, and we might keep a couple people with us. But because so many people were getting saved at Pillar, it was kind of like every time we started a new one, there would be all non-believers in the group. And I'll never forget this one night. We're sitting there, and there were so many non-believers in the group. There's probably about 12 people in the room, and about four of us were saved. And the other, you know, there might have been a couple unsaved, but there's close to the other eight being saved. And three of the people that went around a circle and just say, what's going on? You know, we usually would eat and we'd talk, and they were like, you know, one person started just talking about how awesome Jesus was and cussing left and right, you know, and Lord Jesus is effing awesome, and boom, boom, boom. And then we come to this one guy, and he starts talking about this girl at work and how God gave him victory. She's just a total boop. And, you know, and he's like, and then I called her, hey, look, you effing boop, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, praise God, man, God, I'd never stood up to her before. And he just totally cusses her out, and he used the C word.
Oh, no.
In the middle of the Bible study, and one of the girls goes, oh. You know, one of the moms in the group, and he goes, oh, he looks around, and he goes, I'm sorry. He goes, I probably shouldn't say that word, huh? I mean, that's a word I use, but I'm probably not supposed to say that now that I'm following Jesus, right? And what was so cool is that, you know, I just cracked this big grin, and I said, man, let me tell you something. So many of you guys have been dropping F-bombs and all this stuff in here. And I go, but I got to say, you're so raw and you're so fresh. You don't, this is just beautiful because it's just coming out of your heart. And, you know, everything you're saying about Jesus is absolutely beautiful. And I said, you know, just like you're just talking about one aspect of your life that's turning inside out. And you know what? He's going to change the way you talk. He's going to change all that. But that's not my job. You know, it's just, but it was cool because he all of a sudden, like, and he wondered out loud, like, you know, what, I bet there's some other things I'm probably not to say. And he got, you know, and for me, that's my element, man, because it's so Jesus, and Jesus is right there. If I took a bunch of Christians into the room, with me, like particularly right now, let's say it took you know, 20 Orange County Christians with me into Long Beach, and we went on mission. All that would, you know for a fact, you know, a good chunk of them are going to be in arguments about, you know, Republicanism versus Democrats at some point on that mission, right? If you just took them as they are and didn't train them, or they would start lecturing to them how they should live their life differently. That's what Christians are really, really good at. And, you know, there would be this, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin, or one of the ones I saw on Facebook this week was love the sinner by hating the sin, you know. And when I look at Jesus, man, he's just surrounded. He goes to parties where he's just surrounded by nonbelievers. He's totally out of his element. And he's just ministering to people. And beautiful things are happening. Holy things are happening. It's not that the whole party suddenly put away all immorality, you know, but people are interacting with him and he's meeting them where they're at. People are repenting. It's just beautiful stuff. That's so interesting, man. Yeah. Any questions come to mind, Pete, about, you know, some of the pitfalls you might fall into, or
I don't know, but I think it's going to be really hard for the average church planner to wrap their head around that. Like someone who's listening to this podcast, because if you grew up in the church or spent any amount of time in the church and now you're about ready to go out and start church planning, I mean, what you just said is so foreign to what they will have experienced in most likelihood, right?
Yeah.
Because, people, you know, dropping the F-bomb while talking about Jesus is going to be highly offensive to the average Christian. And I get what you're saying. What you're saying is these guys are so raw. They're brand new Christians. They don't even realize what way's up yet, really. And they're just expressing what's in their heart.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be hard for a lot of Christians to get their head around, because that's just not what they've experienced. That's not the American church.
Yeah, they're expecting the world to clean up before they take a bath. So,
or you just took a bath, you need to be clean now going forward.
Yeah. And so what happens is, for example, like at Refuge Long Beach, because I was dealing with, you know, maybe about 20 Christians or so in the room, and I'm thinking, well, this is the maximum I like a core team, but these aren't guys I haven't recruited them. I've inherited them. And, you know, and I made the prediction that most of you probably won't be here in a year or two. Like, you just won't, because it's not, you know, you've come here probably with something in mind. And I remember we actually had more people because it swelled up and grew kind of big in the very beginning when I got there. I remember one night we were close to 100 people. I mean, we were like 70, 80 people. And I remember just, you know, saying things to get rid of as many as possible. And the funny thing is that I would say things like, look, you know, if we do what God has called us to do and we're on task and the Spirit is here and we're infiltrating the community, then lesbians will come here holding hands. They will have their arm around each other during the service. People will come in drunk. Heroin addicts will come and pass out. And sure enough, I remember one of our Facebook pictures up on Facebook, and some of our sending church people are like, ha ha ha, is that the way you do it at Refuge Long Beach? You know, you sleep in church, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, yeah, no, that's a heroin addict going through withdrawals. You know, if... we're not in your mama's church anymore. You know, this is a real deal. But I remember telling them, you're going to have addicts thrown up in the middle of the service because, you know, they're going through withdrawals and they're here trying to cling to Jesus to get through it. And, you know, if you're not ready for that, you know, then you probably aren't ready to go on mission with us in the inner city. It's going to be different, you know, and you're going to have to really trust the power of God. And that's what I think it comes down to, Pete, is we don't do a lot in the average church that really requires the power of God, right? If we do big launches, we've kind of made it safe. We've taken all the risk out. We've outnumbered them. It's what's called a show of force, where there's more of us than there is of them. We set the tone. We make sure the message is all the same. And the danger is when you're outnumbered by nonbelievers, it can get away from you. I remember doing a meeting in a home in Wales where we took all the atheists and all the skeptics that we knew. Some of them were coming to Pillar and they hadn't gotten saved yet. And we did this night about the inspiration of Scripture. We're like, can the Bible be trusted? They all came, and we had hardcore atheists there that were arguing. And me and the guy who planted the church, a guy named Yan, he ended up, it was so funny, man. He ends up looking at us like, we were looking at each other because they were like, oh, the Bible is just full of crap, you know? And yeah, man, you know, I was reading it with my old man. And I was like, love, what does this mean? He's like, I don't know. And she's like, he's a professor at the university. He's like, if I can't understand it, babe, I don't expect you to. And the whole meeting, my buddy, are looking at each other like, whoa, we're not in Kansas anymore, man. Like, we're being drowned out. They're all saying it's a bunch of nonsense. We better get this meeting back, you know? And at the end, man, what was beautiful is I can tell you, with the exception of one person, every single one of those people came to faith. And it's like, that's just the power of God, man. Like, you can't panic when stuff doesn't seem to be going right. And they all had their own stories. They all came at it differently. One of the people in the room who was actually saying that they thought the Bible is a bunch of nonsense was saved. She was newly saved. You know, she was a universalist for a number of months. And we'd be in the home study and she keeps saying, well, I think all religions lead to God. And at some point, God spoke to her heart, you know, because we'd say, well, you know, we can see how you think that, but, you know, I mean, Jesus did, you know, and we wouldn't smack her down. That's one of the keys. You can't smack people down. You got to let them explore. But man, you really have to have faith in the power of God. And she eventually, I'll never forget the night we were sitting in home study and somebody said something and she turns at him and she goes, you know, I used to think just like you. She's like, well, you know what? And she tells her story, how God changed her mind. She's like, I was reading. It wasn't even the Bible. It was some book she was reading. And she goes, and it was like I heard the voice of God just convincing me. Boom, 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 boom. And you know what it was? It was a book called Dinner with a Complete Stranger, where this guy gets invited to, it's a fiction book, but it's a theoretical. A guy gets an invitation to dinner and it's signed Jesus and he goes thinking it's a practical joke. And we gave that out to people in the church. And it was that. And she really felt God speaking to her heart through that. So guys, starting with nonbelievers, like Pete said, maybe on your first rodeo, it might be a hairy deal. But guys, I would say, and I would issue this challenge, even if you don't plant your church that way, maybe go the L3 route, that level 3 internship. Why not just, because what the point was there is, if they're interning and they want a church plant, why bump them to the next level if they can't do what Paul did? And I would just say to you in your church plant, start praying, God, how do you just surround me with nonbelievers? Like Baker Company, hey, we got the enemy of the left and the right, the south and the east. We're not going to let them get away from us this time. I would love to see you guys, really step out in faith in the power of God and see what they saw in Acts, because that's the same God of the Bible. I mean, we saw miracles. We saw that. The more frontline you go, this is kind of the theme of my next book. A lot of what I'm talking about on this podcast is actually in my next book, which is called Reaching the Unreached, Becoming a Raider of a Lost Art. And that's actually on Amazon. You can pre-order that right now, Pete. Run over there right now, Pete. Get yourself a copy.
Cha-ching!
I actually put to Pete, my best friend, I love you.
You did not. I know you didn't. There's no way you would put that.
Wouldn't that be great?
No.
I haven't dedicated to anyone yet. I'll just give that a thought.
And to the love of my life, PM, may you always be true.
Remember, you've got the power.
Dude, I would love it if you did that. That'd be awesome. Well, I dig it, man. I dig it. I think that was a good little episode there, because I think you hit on what church planners need to know, to feel, to realize.
You know what? It's funny, because something that you said the other day was, we were talking, we're like, man, we've done 200 episodes.
And not a one of them good. It's been horrible.
Well, the further out we get from the beginning, the more I'm like, man, we covered this and that. But to me, it was kind of like, let's rock it old school. Let's go back to our roots, man. And let's get back on some of the stuff that we used to really tell guys, because this is the heart of church planning. And if you guys haven't gone back through and listened to the beginning, the backlogs of our podcast, this is more like what we did in the beginning. As we started getting thinner on topics, you know, I was like, huh, what can we hit on? But there's always stuff to talk about. But something Pete said not long ago, probably about two episodes ago, is, man, no one even remembers what we talked about then. So we're going to keep kicking it old school. For those of you that are new listeners that are coming in, we might just cover some of the same topics, just because we've lived a little since then. We started the podcast, what, 3 years ago?
Had to have been, right? If we're on episode 200, 200. Yeah,
two and a half, I think.
No, this is 203, I think.
Yeah. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
52 episodes a year. So yeah, 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we did the 1 month where we did one every day. So
yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's true. It's our third anniversary.
I love it.
I got the power.
All hey, right. Well, Pete, you know what? Doing all that math just then made my brain tired, because I'm not exactly what you'd call a math pastor.
You're not?
No way, man. That's adding up that when you started saying 203 episodes, that was like magic to me. How does he figure out the years from that? That sounds like magic.
Mm. Yeah, I can feel you on that one. I can feel you on that one. So let me tell you about a little solution I've found. When you're not really feeling the mathness and you don't want to go to jail or screw up things with the IRS, there's a great way that you can handle all the accounting and all those needs at your church. My friend, it's called SimplifyChurch.com.
That sounds amazingly simple, Pete.
They are simplifying church. SimplifyChurch.com. All over the place. They take care of making your life fun and easy again, so you don't have to do any of that math stuff. So why don't you head on over to SimplifyChurch.com and tell them Pete and Peyton sent you.
And that kind of sounds like we just got a memo. Hey, you're supposed to advertise Simplify Church, and we didn't really know what they do. So we're like, yeah, they'll simplify your church. Like, totally, man. Like, if your church is difficult, they'll totally simplify it, man. Simplify Church. But really, guys, what they'll do is your bookkeeping. They'll do your into your tax receipts, and they'll keep you compliant with the IRS. And they'll do a lot of stuff for you like that. Workman's comp, payroll, you name it.
Yes. So, guys, head on over there. Check them out. Simplify Church.
They're getting ready to get a printer that'll actually print out, non-believers for you if you're short on people.
I like it.
Forget all that evangelism. They will literally clone non-believers and print them off on a high-tech scientific printer, and those clones will come to your church.
Why don't you go ahead and close this out? Because I can tell that you have got to pee so bad. You can,
dude. I'm doing the potty dance.
You
right
are,
now.
And it's like driving me crazy, because I'm like, dude, I'm afraid he's going to explode right there.
Are you feeling my pain right now?
I'm uncomfortable watching you do the potty dance.
You're like totally watching the movie right now. I'm just, all I do is, so the potty dance on the
don't,
podcast.
Don't, just close this out and go.
I just spin in my chair. That's what Pete's seeing. I spin back and forth.
And I know what it means.
Peyton got to pee. All right. Well, hey, like Forrest Gump said, I have to go pee. So I'm going to sign us out. Thanks for joining us on the Church Planner Podcast. This has been Pete Mitchell. And Peyton Jones reminding you, if you want to reach the ones nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's going. Doing.
Thanks for joining us for another weekly episode of the Church Planner Podcast with Pete Mitchell and Peyton Jones. We'd love to hear your comments on this episode of the Church Planner Podcast.
visit us online and let us know what you thought at churchplannerpodcast.com. If you subscribe to us via iTunes and have enjoyed the podcast, leave us a positive review. The more positive reviews we receive in iTunes, the more iTunes will promote us to other church planners who would benefit from this show. This podcast is brought to you by the Church Planner Magazine, which is available in the iTunes newsstand or online via churchplannermagazine.com.